the notion of chosenness does not mean that the Jewish people are saying that they are chosen to be better and favored and treasured. It means that the Jewish people chose the Torah as our way. We chose that way of life just as everyone of every faith chooses their way of life. So over history, it's been misinterpreted and misunderstood as being, you know, superior, better, favored by God, but none of that is true. It's never been, and it's led to a lot of anti-Semitism.
This is Four People with Bishop Rob Wright.
Hello, everyone. This is Rob Wright, and we have the distinct honor and privilege to be with a colleague of mine, Rabbi Peter Berg of the Temple here in Atlanta. Peter, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on. Thank you for agreeing to be with us. Rabbi Berg and I have a lot in common. We're husbands, we're fathers. We did some college in the Washington, D.C. area. We did some other work in New York City. We've been in Atlanta for a while. We are on lots of different boards.
We show up at the same meetings all the time.
We show up at a lot of the same meetings. We've been at a lot of the same protests, and I've been always glad about that. I wanted to have you on today to give us a sense of what's going on in the Jewish community. There's lots of news around the Jewish community that we see on all the channels. But let's start off with tell us a little bit about the Temple. I'm not sure all of us know a little bit about this historic congregation in Atlanta.
Yeah, the Temple is the oldest synagogue in Atlanta, not Georgia, because Savannah is actually an older Jewish community. It's over 155 years old. This is our third building. And it's really, you know, it has a storied history. Members of the Temple early on were involved in helping to start Grady Hospital, the Atlanta public school system. You know, the list kind of goes on and on and on. And, famously, the Temple was bombed in 1958 by white supremacists because of the rabbi's outspoken position on racial justice and integration. So, Driving Miss Daisy was filmed in 1989. It's about a Temple member, Morgan Freeman and Jessica Tandy. And Leo Frank was a member of the Temple. It's a famous case in American Jewish history.
Say a little bit about that, because I think that people sort of know the name, but maybe not a lot of the details.
Yeah, so in 1914, Leo Frank was a member of the Temple. He was a foreman at a pencil factory in Marietta.
Yeah.
He was accused of killing. There was a murder that took place, and he was accused of killing Mary Fagan, and because he was Jewish. And of course, he didn't do it, and they were, you know, obviously able to prove that later on. There was a lot of anti-Semitism. Eventually, he was actually lynched by a mob of famous attorneys and businessmen. Between 1914 and really the 1960s, there was tremendous anti-Semitism in Atlanta because of that case. And the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, was founded in part because of that case.
Wow. Yeah, and also the other part that I want to sort of highlight before we got to Leo Frank was when the Temple was bombed. The rumor is, and I think it's actually truth, is that a Christian congregation welcomed members of the Temple to worship temporarily. Is that right?
Not just one, many. So there are roughly 15 churches up and down Peachtree here, it was extraordinary what happened in terms of, you know, use our space for your classrooms, use our space for your worship. People would send donations, you know, people that didn't even have a lot of money would send a $1 donation just to say, we're with you.
Yeah.
We even renamed our social hall Friendship Hall in honor of our Christian neighbors who came and, really, really put themselves out there for us.
Yeah. Well, that's a great word to use going forward because, you know, friendship is sort of the way I understand interfaith conversation and relationship. I can tell you in our Christian denomination, although I only speak for one sort of subset of that sort of big group, is that it's easy for us sometimes to forget that Jesus was Jewish. Right. I like to say we make, you know, God has made us in God's image and we've returned the favor, right? So we forget that Jesus is Jewish, and his sayings, his wisdom, the things that he was tethered to that helped him to sort of speak wisdom and all that sort of stuff were all Jewish. I mean, you know, his Isaiah is who he quotes again and again and again, right? Right. And so for me, at least, having started off my ministry as a school chaplain in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, we talked a lot about the friendship that was possible for Muslim Christians and Jews. And I've seen you on a lot of those stages here in Atlanta. Why is that important for you? Because we could all easily retreat into our own little islands and silos.
Yeah, you know, of course, you know, you're talking about the Abrahamic faiths.
Exactly.
All coming from the same, you know, the same tradition. And yep. And the Hebrew Bible is, of course, the basis for all of those traditions. And there are many other traditions that aren't part of the Abrahamic faith that are, of course, they are our brothers and sisters and our neighbors, and we live with them.
Yeah.
And you know, part of what Jews have always tried to do and wanted to do is to live peacefully with those whom we live with, no matter what part of history, what part of the world. And I really see that living out in Atlanta in this time.
Yeah.
Atlanta is an incredible city for interfaith relations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think about, you know, the times that we've been on stage with Muslim brothers and sisters. We've been on the various stripes of Christians together, all offering prayers, in at least as far as I could tell, nobody giving their own tradition short shrift.
Right.
But at the same time, seeing all the connective tissue, you know, that we are, in fact, a faith family.
I think we have respect for each other.
Well, I think so. You know, I hope so. And I've learned that again and again and again. You know, I'm reminded of one of Desmond Tutu's famous sort of quotes that God is not a Christian, right? Is that we try to take sole ownership of God, and actually we serve a big and loving God who has many children in his arms.
Absolutely. Many paths, yeah.
Oh, many paths, and we've got to remember that. But if that is true, let me ask you a question that I get all the time, Peter. If that is true, and I do believe with all my heart that is true, then how do you claim the uniqueness that you claim, and how do I claim the uniqueness that I claim? Because for some people, they would just say, well, then the whole thing is just a big mishmash, and what's the point of the distinctiveness?
So interestingly, the uniqueness claim isn't real. And what I mean by that is it has been misunderstood so drastically that a famous Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan once said, we should never even use the phrase chosenness because it is so misunderstood. Basically, the notion of chosenness does not mean that the Jewish people are saying that they are chosen to be better and you know, favored and treasured. It means that the Jewish people chose the Torah as our way, right? We chose that way of life just as everyone of every faith chooses their way of life.
Wow.
So over history, it's been misinterpreted and misunderstood as being, you know, superior, better, favored by God. But none of that is true. It's never been. And it's led to a lot of anti-Semitism.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got there because I think that's what I when I thought about, I think about the news and I'm watching, you know, current events and I'm seeing certain media folks speaking up now and some even saying, you know, Hitler wasn't all bad and all kinds of stuff. I said, I got to talk to Peter. And so first of all, help me understand, and I don't mean to be pedestrian here, but help me understand, when you think of anti-Semitism, what do you think of?
Sure. Well,
how do you define that?
Yeah. I mean, listen, there are so many different levels and layers of anti-Semitism. You know, people who hate, dislike the Jewish people simply because they are Jewish.
Yeah.
And it transcends so many different levels and layers. So, you know, it's jokes that people tell. On the one hand, it's not admitting, you know, people in social circles, right? There are periods of times where Jews couldn't go to clubs and certain things. We really see it playing out now in job discrimination. So one of the recent statistics that's out there that's really staggering is that 25% of Jews, once someone in an interview job interview finds out that they're Jewish, the interview ends, or they don't get the job simply because they're Jewish. No explanation.
Wow.
25%, right? 1 in 4. So that's a staggering number. Yes, of course, we see, you know, famous people and people who have Twitter platforms spewing filth, right? We've seen this with Kanye, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
But we see acts of vandalism, swastikas painted on buildings. We see people being attacked. So there was a whole series of attacks in New York against. But what's really scary to me right now with all of that is what we're seeing in our schools. And I'm talking about prominent private public schools across the spectrum, religious, not religious. We're seeing people dressing up as Hitler, saluting Hitler, painting swastikas. When I tell you that not a day goes by, not a single day, where I don't have to interact with students from our congregation and what they're facing, or with the principal of a school, prominent schools, you wouldn't believe which ones. It's horrifying.
There was a joke on SNL last past Saturday that said, you know, they were playing at it, but at the same time pointing to something that's alarming, which is that Hitler is somehow making his way back. Like, how is that name and how is that persona rising from the grave? It's bizarre to me. What do you think? What do you credit that?
I mean, I grew up in a time after the Holocaust where, you know, all we would be taught was never again, never again.
Right.
And to see the likes of a Hitler coming back, to see people, you know, buying and talking about Mein Kampf, you know, the whole thing, it is, there's not a Jewish person who does not have a relative who died in the Holocaust, if not, you know, many.
Right.
Who can trace their lineage back. And so it is so horrifying and so scary. It's when we say that we have to have an Israel, a place where we can go, God forbid, this is real.
Yeah.
It's really real.
And of course, in my hometown, which is Pittsburgh, where I was born and raised, they had one of the worst expressions of anti-Semitic violence at the Tree of Life synagogue. Which was just horrifying, and it happened in a part of town which I grew up in, and knew that it was the Jewish community, Squirrel Hill, in Pittsburgh, where there were the businesses and, you know, all kinds of restaurants, wonderful foods and cultural bits and pieces, and that synagogue was at the center of it, and yet so many people were killed that day, and for no good reason other than the hatred of people because of who they are and what they believe.
Right. To walk into a house of worship, any house of worship, any religion, it's really, it's the worst case scenario.
And is it scapegoating? Is the resurgence about scapegoating? We know that Hitler's rise involves scapegoating people about economics and all kinds of things. And if they could somehow control the Jews and eradicate the Jews, and somehow the economy and the cultural affairs of Germany would get better, is that where people are going? Is this about fear based?
In part, it always is. In every juncture of Jewish history, you know, for 3,000 years, Jews are blamed for the ills of society because that's how humans work. So, you see the economic challenges that are around us, the disease, you know, the COVID and all this, and so hatred rears its ugly head again, and the old tropes that just come circling back. These things that just have, obviously aren't true. Jews killed Jesus. Jews are chosen. Whatever it is, it's an easy out for people, and not enough people are saying something, right? I mean, I'm pleading with all the clergy who are listening today to talk about it publicly from your pulpits, and to all your listeners. You know, when you're standing at the water cooler at work and somebody says something, you know, speak out. You know, say that's unacceptable.
That's right. No safe harbor for these kinds of comments, this kind of thinking, I think is what we should be agreeing in, agreeing about, is that there is no safe harbor for any of these kinds of comments. We'll take a break right now. We're on with Rabbi Peter Berg.
Hi, listeners. Thank you for listening to Four People, a space of digital evangelism. You can keep up with us on Instagram and Facebook at Bishop Rob Wright. And now back to Four People.
Peter, I want to go the other way if I can. And this is delicate, so I'm going to ask you to give me some room here and help me understand some things. You know, when people talk, sometimes they say that the Jewish community has done a really good job positioning itself in a place beyond critique. For instance, you know, if we want to wonder out loud about where Jews exert power and influence and control in certain industries, etc., that can't really be spoken of, so the argument goes, without risking being called anti-Semitic, and we can't really sort of wonder out loud in public forums about Israel and Palestine and abuses that may be happening both ways. Say a little bit about that, because I think that that's also important, is to completely condemn anti-Semitism, but at the same time hold in tension an ability to dialogue about, you know, missteps on about a community, or just a critique of a community. What do you say about that?
So, you know, of course, anyone at any time has the right to critique any community or any country for you know, no one says, you know, you can't criticize a government of Israel, or a particular leader in Israel, or, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, aren't happy about settlement activity, right? The issue is what happens when people choose to criticize only Israel, right? So what happens is people will particularly, you know, for example, the United Nations will criticize only Israel for abuse, without singling out the hundreds of countries that are daily abusing and only Israel, and it's a one-sided thing, right? Won't criticize, you know, bombs coming over from Gaza, right? So it's when it's a one-sided, that's when people say, okay, that's anti-Semitism, when you're singling out only Israel, only the Jewish people, that's anti-Semitism.
Yeah. So the invitation is then if you're going to critique, be fair, right? Be fair with the critique. You know, Dave Chappelle helps us to get at this thing when he says, you know, if it's black people, he says, and now, of course, this is comedy, so, you know, everybody relax. But he said, you know, when it's all black people, you know, the media calls it a gang. When it's all Italian people, they call it a mob. When it's all Jewish people, it's a coincidence and we must never talk about it. Right. So I think he's getting to this point. He's dancing on a line, which says is that there is a perception out there that is real to a lot of people, that you cannot risk a criticism or a critique without being labeled anti-Semitic.
Right. Well, I think, you know, when people make sweeping generalizations about the Jewish people, that's not a critique. That's hatred. When people, you know, so, you know, that's different from a fair critique. You know, yeah. When somebody says, okay, I wish this policy would stop, but, you know, firing missiles from Gaza, no comment, or,
right,
you know, the only country abusing is this one, you know, so those are, that to me is crossing a line. And it's not a fair or an honest critique.
I hear that. And I think about living in that tension, you know, I mean, cause I guess what I want, I suppose, is a world where someone white could ask about black on black violence in Chicago or even in Atlanta and not be called racist.
Right.
Or you could wonder out loud with people about, you know, just how does the whole transgender thing work without being called, transphobic. And I guess that's what I'm saying is that I don't know how we get there, but I think we got to get there and stay there where we disassociate violence and bring fairness to critique of everybody or questioning about everybody. I think we've got to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of having, you know, honest, thoughtful, factually supported conversations. Right. of course. So the question is what happens when we don't have the facts? What happens when we're not bringing balance? What happens when and look, there are sweeping generalizations about the Jewish people that have been around for a long time that are, and that's true for everybody.
It's true for
people of color. It's true for gender diversity. You know, it's,
What's that old quip about stereotypes are for the intellectually lazy, right?
Right.
Well, I want to say that you have in our relationship paid me two great honors. And you have demonstrated for me what interfaith really kind of looks like at great depth. And one was when I sort of right at the very beginning of us getting to know each other, I wondered out loud with you if I could bring my Christian clergy to the temple for renewal of vows.
That was so fun.
Our renewal of vows. And I asked you to preach. So not only to be host, but to preach. And you allowed it. And I don't know if you remember saying this, and I felt I was really overwhelmed by your hospitality and the hospitality of your community, because, you know, we were trying to figure out, can we be ourselves? Can we celebrate, you know, communion, the Eucharist there in your holy place? And you said to me that the bar for hospitality for you is that we could be ourselves in your house.
Yeah, it was really fun. I mean, that is something I've never done before. And I loved it. And that's what interfaith is all about. Of course, yeah. You can be yourselves,
Yeah. I've never forgotten it either. I when people ask me about hospitality, I they say Christian hospitality because I'm clearly a Christian clergy person. I say, well, one of the best examples I can give you was extended to me by a Jewish community, right? And then the second great honor you paid me in gift you actually gave me was to invite me to the bar mitzvah of your son. And I say that, I'm not being cheeky at all. I say that because I what I saw there was real spiritual formation, and it had everything to do with family and generations. It had everything to do with story and being, you know, a continuity in story about a people who are walking with God, from then until now. And then what I also loved was that there was this bar mitzvah project. I'm probably not getting the name right, but it help me with that. There was a project that I think your son took up, which was part of the bar mitzvah process. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's it. Chayu is a rabbi here. So each of our students, they actually participate in multiple projects where they're learning about the mitzvot, the commandments of our tradition, and they're learning how to apply them in their lives. So my oldest son raised money to donate a Torah scroll in Israel to a section of the Western Wall that is under exclusive control of the ultra-Orthodox. And he wanted to make sure that women who in that scenario are prohibited from reading from the Torah had a Torah scroll that they could read from. So it was a very, you know, egalitarian thing that he was interested in doing.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Well, you know, we have something called confirmation, which is where, by and large, young people sort of take up agency now, share the responsibility as young adults, you know, in the midst of a congregation. And I went back and I rethought confirmation through the eyes of bar mitzvah. I saw that really as a three-dimensional experience that you're giving the young people. And I'm sure they never, I guess people talk about that when they get older, about their bar mitzvah and how they sort of stay tethered to all of that.
All the time. And of course he remembers that his bar mitzvah, that not only were like, you know, civic leaders, mayors and all that there, but that, or that, you know, we had a blessing at the end and all these Jewish, Christian, Muslim, all these clergy came up and gave him a blessing. And that was really powerful for him.
Yep. Yep. I referred to it already, but I one of my first jobs as an ordained person was I was a chaplain to the Cathedral School on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and it was an Episcopal school, but you know there were more Jewish kids there than Episcopalians, and kids from all over New York and all over the boroughs, and you know, we had one youngster who was you know, his bar mitzvah was coming, and he wanted to have his bar mitzvah on the high altar of the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. And there we are under this gigantic cross on a Muslim prayer rug in between two gigantic, I'm not going to get the name right, I forgot the name, but two big candelabras. Oh, Lord. I'm sorry?
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, that the State of Israel gave to the Cathedral of St. John the Divine.
Menorah.
Menorahs, of course. But they were just gigantic. I wondered if they had a different name. But the gigantic floor-sitting deals underneath the cross on a Muslim prayer rug with his rabbi and his Christian chaplain there. And the kid saw no problem with any of that. And I thought to myself, this kid's already figured it out.
Well, in America, it's, you know, this is a country where we should all be able to live together and dwell together and celebrate together. And I love that image.
Yeah.
It's the same reason I love, you know, when all the clergy from your denomination came to be at the temple.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
We can do that.
We can do it. We can do it. So I guess the last thing I want to ask you is that, you know, you're a preacher. You were inducted into the Martin Luther King College for Preachers.
Yeah.
You know, and Sabbath is coming for you, and you're looking out the window at this world. The headlines are coming to you just like they're coming to all of us. What are you saying to your folks? Is there a particular scripture that is really dancing in your imagination that's on the tip of your tongue? What do you have to say to folks that is helping them move from strength to strength, given all of this anti-Semitism, uncertain politics, this... you know, the Fed is going to raise the rates again. What are you saying to folks?
You know, there's one of the things I've been talking about recently. You know, I've been getting a lot of questions. There's a, you know, a tradition during Hanukkah, which is about to begin, that we light the menorah, it's called a Chanukiah, in a window. And the idea is that you're supposed to publicize the miracle of Hanukkah. In other words, it's not just internal, you do it in your house just for you, but, you know, to show the world that you know, that this miracle of light occurred many years ago and there are miracles all around us. And people have been calling and saying, you know, should in today's anti-Semitic world, and, you know, should we really be doing that, lighting our Hanukkah in a window for all kinds of people to see? You know, I've been really talking about the power of doing that all the more so. That this is a year that people should proudly be standing in their windows and lighting their Chanukiah, their menorah, and sharing the joy of the miracle of Hanukkah with the world. You know, there's a famous picture it was taken in the 1950s in the 1940s of a rabbi who he's lighting his family's Chanukiah in a window, and then you see in the picture across the street a Nazi flag. It was taken in Germany during the time of the war. And you can and hear someone proudly lighting his Hanukkah lights, you know, right in the face of Nazism. And you know, I want people to be to be proud of who they are and what they believe, and to know that even with the difficulties and challenges around us, we can all spread the light around.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, so it's not only to have the menorah in the window, but all the courage that's implicit there. I mean, because this is, you know, you're asking people to be who God has called them to be, unafraid. You know, I've got lots of favorites in the Bible, and I spent a lot of time in the Old Testament as a Christian. I love the stories. I love the prophets. I think a lot about Malachi when I think about conversations like ours, which is, At some point, we pray that we'll all be able to live under our own vine and fig tree, and that nobody will make us afraid. Nobody will make us afraid, and we'll all know that we're all made in the image of God, and that is the dignity that's been given to all of us. And so, I think a lot about that. Well, we're going to ask Rabbi Berg to, as we close, to just say God's blessing over us, all of our listeners, and in Hebrew and in English, and then we'll be all finished. Peter, thank you for coming.
It's an honor to be here, my friend, and not just to be able to have a conversation with you, but to roll up our sleeves together and do God's work in the community. You're really a gem in the community. Thank you for the offer to say a prayer. I bet I'm the first person to say Hebrew on the podcast.
So you are.
I'm excited about that.
I love it.
and I wanted to share the prayer from chapter 6 of the book of Numbers from our shared tradition. It's a threefold priestly blessing. And we know that, you know, God is the one who offers the blessing, but all of us humans we have the honor to act as God's agents and to bless each other. And so this really is a blessing for all of us to bless each other. Yivarechacha Adonai v'yishmerecha. May God bless us all and keep us. Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha. May the light of God's presence shine upon us and inspire us. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. And may our knowledge of the oneness of this universe help us always to find happiness in life, peace in our world, and joy in our shared humanity. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Brothers and sisters, Rabbi Peter Berg of the Temple in Atlanta, Georgia. God bless.